Good afternoon, everybody. It's good to see so many people here. Looking forward to learning together again, as we do every other week. Last class, we spoke about the idea of praying in another language. Halachically speaking, is one permitted to pray in a language other than Hebrew? And not to rehash out the specific discussion all over again, but the conclusion was, according to many poskim, if in a situation of need, if one doesn't understand Hebrew, doesn't speak Hebrew, is unable to get a transliterated sitter, in an extenuating circumstance, there is room to permit davening in another language. And that was an interesting discussion. This week, what I want to talk about is, I think, a fascinating and little discussed corollary of that question, which is, can you pray in sign language? It's an interesting question, right? Because on the one hand, somebody's not really supposed to pray in a language other than Hebrew. But there is wiggle room. There is wiggle room, certainly in extenuating circumstances, for somebody who is not able to communicate with words. There's no greater extenuating circumstance than that, and that such a person is not able to daven no matter what language the text of, one second, no matter what language the text of Tefillah is in. So we're not going to go back today into the whole conversation of whether prayer can be recited in any language. We'll start with working under the assumption, this is an assumption that we reached last week, that one can pray in another language in an extenuating circumstance. And our question is today, is sign language included in that? Yeah.
So you make the comment of it being in Hebrew, but sign language is in more than one language. Hebrew sign language is very different than American sign language. So the issue is whether or not it's verbal or not.
Correct.
As opposed to the language.
Correct.
Because the language of Israeli sign language is in Hebrew.
Correct, correct. I guess one of the things we'll discuss is a non-verbalized language, even if it's the Hebrew version of that non-verbalized language, akin enough to the actual spoken version of that language, yeah.
I don't know if you addressed this last week, but is spoken language so the person hears it or does God hear it? Because the person signing will not hear the message. But
okay.
Is it for God to know that they're...
Oh, we didn't have the shear yet. We didn't have the shear yet. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. I just want to make... I want to make three disclaimers. Disclaimer number one is that right now we're referring to somebody who wishes to discharge their obligation or at least fulfill the mitzvah of reciting specifically Shemona Esrei. Certainly somebody who wishes to simply communicate an informal prayer to God can do so in sign language because God understands sign language. Certainly God understands it even if you don't say anything. We say He knows even people's thoughts. So certainly somebody who wishes to pray in sign language can do so. What we're talking today is whether somebody can fulfill the Shemona Esrei in sign language. That's number one. Number two is normally a cheresh, which is the rabbinic term for somebody who is unable to hear and often unable to speak. A cheresh is someone who is exempt from mitzvot. Typically speaking, there's no more, I'm sorry. Categorically exempt from mitzvot. It's not clear what the source for the idea that a cheresh, somebody who's unable to speak and somebody who's unable to hear, is exempt from mitzvot is. The Chasam Sofer has a teshuva about this, and he says he thinks it's a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, meaning it was something that was simply taught by God to Moses at Mount Sinai, and it doesn't have a specific scriptural source. The simple reading, really, of the Gemara and the opinion of several poskim is that the reason somebody who is not able to hear and not able to speak is exempt from mitzvot is because it's assumed that such an individual lacks the rational agility and mental maturity necessary to bind one to the Torah's many obligations. However, somebody who is hard of hearing, somebody who cannot hear but can. The Mishnah really assumes that somebody who is not able to speak is also somebody who's not able to hear is also not able to speak. But realistically, in reality, nowadays that's not true. It's not always true. And so, somebody who is deaf but who can speak is halachically viewed as somebody who is obligated in all mitzvot. If they can speak, most poskim would say, except maybe those specific mitzvot that require hearing, such as Megillah, most poskim would say that somebody who can hear is obligated in mitzvot in general. The question is whether somebody who can communicate, but only via nonverbal means, somebody who can communicate, but for example, only via sign language, is considered to be in the category of somebody who is deaf, but can still speak. So this is a big discussion in the poskim. Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that really, even if somebody can speak in sign language, as long as the individual cannot speak verbally, they are still going to be considered in the category of a cheiresh with all of the legal limitations that apply. As we will see, Rav Moshe still holds that it's better for someone like that to daven in sign language than to not daven in all at all. But essentially, Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that someone who is deaf, even if that person can still communicate through sign language, is not obligated in mitzvot. And others disagree. Others do disagree with that. Some poskim do say that, such as the Ketav Sofer, were apparently mesupak. They were unsure about it. Rabbi Elisha Anshelovich, who's a contemporary rabbi and a teacher in Israel, we're going to get to an article he wrote on the subject. He actually argues that we really should consider the person who is deaf and who is able to speak only via sign language a bar dat, meaning somebody who is completely lucid for the sake of fulfilling commandments and is therefore capable of fulfilling mitzvot. We're still in the disclaimers, and all of this is to say that this year, today, is really to address the theoretical capacity for someone to daven in sign language, not to determine whether someone who is deaf is actually obligated to daven in sign language in the first place. What this means, I suppose, is that we'll assume, I guess, right now, for the purposes of the discussion, that such an individual who can speak via sign language but can't speak verbally and can't hear is going to be obligated, because otherwise this question would never get off the ground. But that is a discussion, and we're not having that discussion today. It's a different conversation. It's an important conversation. It's a different conversation, and it wouldn't be prudent of us to address it in the limited time that we have today. But what we will talk about today is whether someone can fulfill the mitzvah to daven Shemona Esrei in sign language. Again, not whether they're obligated to fulfill the mitzvah of Shemona Esrei in the first place. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. The third disclaimer is that this is not a comprehensive shiur. It's really just an introduction to the topic. The reason why I'm saying that is for two reasons. Number one is because practical questions of this nature must be weighed with the greatest sensitivity, and practical outgrowths really should not be deduced on the basis of a mere 45-minute overview. Number two is that there's a lot more to discuss. We are just going to share some tshuvot, some words of Rishonim. There's a lot more to talk about when discussing this question thoroughly that we're not going to have time for. So I just wanted to note that there is more material out there than we will see. Okay. So now that we've gotten all that behind us, let's get started. Let's answer this. Let's try and answer and at least address or introduce this question. So even though we aren't going again into the entire sugya of praying in another language right now, let's just refresh our memories. The Mishnah in Sota, source number one, we read it last time we met. The Mishnah in Sota says, Elu ne'emarin b'chol lashon. The following declarations and statements and passages can be recited in any language. They do not need to be recited specifically in Hebrew. Number one is Parshat Sota. Number two is Vidoy Maiser. Number three, Kriyat Shema. And number four, Tefillah. Number five, Birkat Hamazon. Number six, Shvuot HaEidud Shvuot HaBikadon. We explained what all these were last week. You can read the English translation to refresh your memory. But what we noted here, most importantly for our purposes, is that Tefillah is listed in this Mishnah as something that can be said in any language. So I just wanted to remind us of that Mishnah. So now I want to ask you a question: is how do we begin to answer a question like this? If you want to look at halacha, what are the frameworks or the paradigms that we might be able to look to in the Torah that can help us answer this question? I guess another way of asking this question would be, what kinds of questions do we need to answer in order to arrive at the answer to this question? Anybody have any thoughts? Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind, I think, is an interesting sugya in halacha, is what we would call in halachic parlance, ketiva kedibor. Is writing considered to be like speaking? There are various areas of halacha where something is either typically or must be spoken, where things must be verbalized. And there's an interesting halachic discussion about whether somebody who writes and doesn't speak it, whether that writing can count as speaking for the purposes of making a vow or discharging an obligation that must be verbalized. And so I think this is an important question to look at, because writing is a non-verbal form of communication, right? If we can figure out the status of writing, maybe we can extrapolate to sign language, another non-verbal form of communication. So let's look at this a little bit. Is writing like speaking? Now, again, there are more sources than we'll go into, but let's begin. We'll start with the Gemara in Megillah. Preamble here is that there's a mitzvah to hear the Megillah on Purim, and the Gemara says in Masechas Megillah, Haya kotva dorsha umagiha kevin libo yatsa v'chule. This quote from the Mishnah says that if somebody was writing a Megillah, or expounding upon it, or correcting it, the individual reads all of its words as he was doing so, if he had intent to fulfill his obligation with that reading, yatsa, he has fulfilled his obligation. What this means is that, let's say you have a person who's correcting a Megillah. He's writing in words of the Megillah. And in that case, the individual also read the words as they were doing it. And this must have been happening on Purim. Does that person fulfill the obligation to hear the Megillah? So on the one hand, they were writing it. On the other hand, they were also verbalizing what they said. So the Gemara says, Hey Chidami, what are we dealing with here? What are the circumstances of this case? Idika mesader psuka v'chatevle. If the individual was speaking each verse of the Megillah and then writing it around, so then kikiva libo mayhave. What of it that he intended to fulfill his obligation with that reading? He hadn't written it yet, so it must emerge that the individual was reciting it by heart, and somebody who recites the Megillah by heart does not fulfill their obligation. They have to recite at least the majority of the Megillah in writing. So the Gemara says we can't be talking about a case where the person articulated it before they wrote it, because then there's no shaila. The person obviously didn't fulfill their obligation, because if it wasn't written yet, then it meant that they were saying it by heart, and somebody who says it by heart is not going to fulfill their obligation. Ella, the Gemara concludes, dechatev psuka psuka v'karele. We're talking about a case where the individual wrote each verse and then read it out. In such a case, where the person is writing the Megillah and reading it as the individual is writing it, he wrote a verse and then he read it. He wrote a verse and then he read it. In that situation, the individual, im kivein libo yatsa, if they had intent to fulfill their obligation, they have fulfilled their obligation. There's a lot of interesting halachot of Megillah that one can ask on this. We're not going to go into it now, but it is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, actually. If you look in the source number 3, in Shulchan Aruch, Arachayim, Simin Tavresh, Tzadi, Sifi, Gimel, Hayakotva, Shekore, Pasuk, Megillah, Shehumat, if the writer is reading a verse in the Megillah in order to copy it, and he writes it, and then he writes it in the other Megillah, then if the person intends to fulfill the obligation, he has fulfilled his obligation. So what do we see from here?
Intention is important.
Intention to fulfill the mitzvah is important, absolutely. That's true. That's true. What else do we see from here? Exactly. I think you're right. That the Gemara says you specifically are Yotze when you also verbalized, when you read along with what you actually wrote. If you just wrote the Megillah, there's a mitzvah to at least hear or to say Kriyat HaMegillah. That does not work. That's not going to work, in fact, to fulfill to fulfill the obligation. It seems from this Gemara in Megillah that writing alone, when there's a verbal element there, writing alone is not considered sufficient to discharge an obligation. It has to also be spoken. And it is for this reason that somebody who is writing a Megillah does not fulfill the obligation unless they also spoke it. Is that how who proofreads themselves?
The sofer.
Meaning when somebody's writing a Megillah, do they...
Then they read out loud?
Oh, I think we're talking about... I don't know what the standard practice is. I think we're talking about a case where somebody is specifically doing it because they're not going to hear Megillah otherwise. They're trying to fulfill their obligation. Yeah, okay. So that seems to be the psak from the Gemara in Megillah. However, there is an interesting, our next potential proof, the implication here, by the way, is that if we can extrapolate from the mitzvah of Megillah, which maybe we can't, and there are reasons why we might not be able to extrapolate from the mitzvah of Megillah, but to the extent that this is a paradigm we can look to, we could perhaps suggest that when verbal enunciations are required, writing is not going to work, and therefore maybe sign language would also not work. In fact, Rabbi Akiva Eger, the great European posek, has a teshuvah to his uncle, Rabbi Binyamin Wolf Eger, in which the latter, Rabbi Wolf, argues that because of this proof, and I think some other reasons, one cannot halachically fulfill the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer by writing it down. If somebody wanted to write Sfiras HaOmer instead of say Sfiras HaOmer, Rabbi Binyamin Wolf thought that maybe this would be a proof that one cannot do so. Writing is not considered like speaking. In any case, our next potential proof text is a teshuva of the Gaonim. We've explored some teshuva of the Gaonim before. The Gaonim were from the period of halachic jurisprudence before the Rishonim, and we have some of their responsa. A lot of them, due to the tireless work of researchers and manuscript hunters and things like that. So, in any case, we have the following tshuva from the Gaonim in source number 4. An interesting case. Vishishahaltim. Your question was as follows: Reuven shenishba shelo yedaber im Shimon. Reuven, certain fellow named Reuven, usually probably not his actual name, but for the purposes of the discussion, his name is Reuven. Sheshnishba shelo yedaber im Shimon. Reuven swore that he would not speak with Shimon. I guess he was angry at him, and he took a vow that he would not speak with Shimon. He took a vow. V'Shimon nichnas imo. And what happened is that over time, this vow apparently proved to be very difficult to uphold. Reuven had to communicate with Shimon. And so what would happen? Shimon nechnas imo. Shimon would enter with him or with other people. V'Reuven medaber la'acherim. And Reuven would speak to others tshuvato. So these people would come in. Let's say Reuven is a Rav. And they would ask the Rav a shaila. And Shimon, who also needed the answer to this question, would be present when Reuven spoke to the other people. And so what happens? Reuven wouldn't speak directly to Shimon, but he would also technically speak to Shimon because Shimon was in the group of people that were being addressed. So that's one situation. V'Shimon shomea. And Shimon would hear what he said. Upa'amim. And sometimes, shekotev elav pitka b'teshuva. And sometimes Reuven would, to get around his vow not to speak to Shimon, he would write to Shimon something on a note that needed to be communicated to Shimon, and Shimon would have that communication that way. And sometimes, upa'amim, she'en sham adam, sometimes there would be nobody else in the room besides for Reuven and Shimon. The Shimon show il tzrachav, and Shimon would ask Reuven his questions. The Reuven medaber kalape hakotel. Reuven would stand facing the wall, and he would speak as if he was talking to the wall. And so therefore, Reuven thought that maybe in all of these cases, he would not be violating his vow not to speak with Shimon, because he was either talking to other people, or he was writing it, or he was speaking simply to the wall. And the question arose, and it came before the Gaonim. Mutar olo. Is that permitted? Is Reuven going to be in violation of his vow when he engages in any one of these, admittedly, a little bizarre mediums of communication? And so they answered as follows. Kach ra'inu gam shamanu mizikeinenu. We have seen and we have heard from our elders. Shehayu morim she'ot hanshenei hadrachim harishonim mutarin. That according to our elders, they would instruct people who also apparently had these and similar shilas that the first two methods of communication are permitted. They're not going to be considered a violation of the vow. What were the first two methods of communication? The first one was speaking to a group, and the second one was communicating in writing. Exactly. The second one is communicating in writing. And so it seems that writing is not going to be considered violation of a vow not to speak to someone. So maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but it does seem like a little bit of a precedent to say that if writing is not akin to speaking. If it were, then it would be prohibited for Reuven to communicate that way to Shimon, because Reuven took a vow not to speak with Shimon. So from the fact that Reuven can still write to Shimon, we can learn maybe that nonverbal communication is not going to be considered like actual verbal communication. And it's good news for Reuven, who apparently needed to communicate very frequently with Shimon, who he vowed not to speak to. But it also might mean that somebody who needs, that when it comes to speaking, like a mitzvah of tefillah, where there's a mitzvah of dibor, then it's not going to work. Writing is at least not going to work, and maybe to the extent, again, our assumption, we're going to question that assumption at the end, but our assumption right now that maybe writing can be extrapolated to sign language would mean that sign language might not work either. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch does paskin this way in source number 5 when it comes to oaths and vows. Misha Nishba, it's on the bottom of page number 1. Misha Nishba O Nadar Shelo Yedaberim Chaveru Yachol Lichtov Loktav. If you vow not to speak to somebody, you can still write them letters, because writing is not going to be considered like speaking. So we have two proofs here. One Gemara in Megillah and one Teshuvah from the Gaonim. Both of them seem to indicate that writing is not going to work where speaking is necessary. And writing is not going to violate a vow where that vow was to refrain from speaking. And there is a very interesting Teshuvah.
Sometimes you can't speak. So he asks you a question and you write them. So you make me feel better. It's not really speaking.
There you go. So Poskim do talk about that, I believe. Maybe we could do another shir on when it's prohibited to interrupt in tefillah. Is writing considered an interruption? It is a related question. There's one more teshuva that we should look at in this camp, the same camp, that writing is not like speaking. It's not going to work where speaking is required. Is a teshuva of the Radbaz. The Radbaz writes in Chelek Gimel Siman Tav Resh Hei that we don't have to do this whole thing inside, but somebody asked him if somebody wrote down a swear, is that going to be considered halachically valid like a verbal swear would be? If somebody swore to do such and such a thing, or I'm going to loan my item to so and so, if you wrote that down, is that halachically binding? If somebody verbalized it, it would be halachically binding. But someone asked the Radbaz, if it's just spoken, is it halachically binding or not? And the Radbaz says something very interesting. He writes, Ra'iti katu b'shem echad min hagidolim. I saw once in the writing somewhere that chashiva shavua, that it is actually going to be considered valid. That's remarkable, right? That the writing is going to, where a verbal swearing actually causes it affects a change, meaning where you vow to give something to someone, then you would be obligated to do that. Writing is going to count. And it seems to be the opposite of what we were reading until now. We had read that writing is not going to work where speaking is necessary. But if you can if we know that you need to speak something in order to a verbalized vow is valid, and writing it is also valid, then maybe we can see from here that writing is going to work. Although he concludes and basically takes away any hava amina, any I would have, any potential thoughts that it would be such a thing. Because he writes, however, that is only kevan derov haolam b'sha'a shekotvim motzin b'safa ma'ashekotvim. That's only because when people write it, they also have the habit of verbalizing what they're writing. So people are writing something down, they also have the habit to speak it. And so that's the assumption. However, he writes that if the individual were not to verbalize it and only to write it, one would not actually be bound by that. Again, and he concludes as a general rule, Klala demilta, the general matter is, ki divarim shebalev einam divarim, matters of the heart, things which are unspoken, do not have halachic valence. Ve ketiva uchtiva lav kedibor dame. And speaking is not akin to writing, and writing is not going to work where speaking is necessary. And so therefore, the individual who vowed in writing to do such and such a thing is not going to be obligated to uphold their vow. That's the ruling of the Radbaz. So we have two tshuvas, one from the Gaonim, one from the Radbaz, one Gemara in Megillah, that's seemingly writing is not going to work where speaking is necessary. Okay?
Does this all follow the general view that the rabbis don't like vowels? And so they would like narrow the area of validity for a vowel. It's because people could be very loose with language. And so if you just put a lot of restrictions, then it's a rare case where a person has a true vowel that they have to annul properly.
I don't think so. I think this is not because the question was the rabbis generally were reticent to endorse people taking vows because it can lead to all sorts of complications. So the question was maybe this can be seen as an outgrowth. We're trying to limit the situations in which vows apply so that it's not going to work. I think that the reason why is simply because they don't consider writing to be like speaking. I think that's that's what he says. He doesn't mention anything about. You're saying it might be even more better to write it. Okay, that's a great question. Yeah.
I'm sorry I came in a little late, so I missed the big picture. But from a legal perspective, at least secularly, it doesn't matter what you say. Sign on the dotted line, and that's what counts.
Ah.
So it's the complete opposite.
Okay, so I don't know if you read ahead in the source sheet, but I'm glad you're asking this question right now, because it brings us to a very interesting Teshuva of the Chavos Yair. From all of the sources we just read, it seems that writing is not akin to speaking. However, these sources are not the end of the discussion. There's a very important teshuva by the Chavos Yair. The Chavos Yair is Rabbi Yair Chaim Bachrach, and he's not the only one who says this, by the way. He was born, in 1639. He was Nifter in 1702. He was a rabbi in Worms, I believe, and in Germany. I think he was born in Moravia. He was a major, major halachic decisor, big halachic heavyweight, as we might say. And he writes in his teshuva, he's in source number 7, he writes very interestingly, Vadai de dibor eino mi'inyan ketiva. He says, obviously, it is clear that speaking and writing are totally separate entities. Mikol makom. Nevertheless, however, lo yugra koch ktiva l'inyan kiyum hadavar. The act of writing something is certainly no worse than speaking something. Umatsinu, sometimes he says we find d'adif mine. Sometimes we even find that we're speaking is going to work. Writing is even one step better. Writing is actually not going to work when something needs to be verbalized. But sometimes, like, first of all, it's not worse. And sometimes, second of all, it's even going to be better than actually speaking. Sha'arei leit be ta'anat hashtav, ta'anat hashbah. Because it has no concerns that it can't be manipulated via a claim that someone was only teasing, or a claim that someone only agreed to something so as not to have to swear. These are complicated legal topics we're not going to get into now. But suffice it to say that that's a discussion for another time. But suffice it to say that in certain cases, certain legal cases, writing, is actually going to be better than speaking. And then he continues, and he says, I know, viadati, I know, mimalat hadibor shehu geder ha'adam chai medaber. I know that speech is the definition of a living, speaking person. And how do we know that? He says, uchitargum, because we have the Targum Onkelos in Bereshis, says, when it says in Bereshis that Hashem made man into a nefesh chaya, into a living being, the Targum Onkelos there says, what does it mean that God made him into a living being? It says that God gave him the power of speech. So there's something with the speaking very connected to the very creation of humankind. And he says, I know that speech is very important, and you can talk my ear off, he says, about how speech is very important. But he says, Mikol makom le'inyan kiyum davar lo yigra koach k'tiva midibor. When it comes to fulfilling certain matters of halacha, one writing is not going to be any worse than speaking. And he concludes humbly, Kach ala b'da'ati hakala v'klusha v'hatarud. Such is my simple and harried opinion. He says, I'm very busy. I know that maybe I'm not the greatest deciser. He's humble. He was one of the greatest decisors. And he says, but I believe, I really do believe that when it comes to certain things, writing is going to be no worse and sometimes even better than speaking. The Chavos Ya'ir is not the only one to espouse this position. Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Chasam Sofer both also consider the possibility that Sfiras HaOmer can be counted via writing. So, just to summarize, where does this leave us? We have some sources that seem to indicate that writing is like speaking, and we have some sources, perhaps more sources, that seem to indicate that writing is not considered like speaking. There's an interesting piece of the Sha'arei Teshuva, also cited and really elaborated by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Sha'arei Teshuva and the Aruch HaShulchan say it might depend on the mitzvah we're talking about. Maybe sometimes ketiva is going to work, but maybe sometimes it's not going to work, and that will all depend on the actual nature of the mitzvah that's under discussion. What are we specifically talking about here? We have many mitzvot. Some of them can be affected through writing, and some of them can't. Sha'arei Teshuva was Rabbi Chaim Mordechai Margaliot, or Margulies. He was born in 1780. He was nifter in 1823. The Sha'arei Teshuva was published in Dubno, and it's a collection of the opinions of others on the Shulchan Aruch. It's basically a commentary that collected commentaries and assembled them and made them into like one running commentary. Included a lot of Sephardic poskim. And in Hilchot Sfiras HaOmer, he addresses the question of whether someone can count Sfiras HaOmer by writing it. Those who have been at our weekday Mincha Mariv halachic discussions might remember that about a week and a half ago we spoke about this question. Can somebody fulfill the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer by writing down Sfirah instead of speaking it? So the Sha'arei Teshuva is one of those to address this question. And he writes in source number 8, when it comes to writing down Sfiras HaOmer, La'ani es daisi, in my humble opinion, barur afilu katav shiva asar yom shehem, etc. Even on the 17th day, if one wrote out, today is 17 and so and so days, meaning they wrote out the proper sphira formula, lo yatza klal. They have not fulfilled their obligation at all. He says, in my humble opinion, I don't think that somebody who writes sphira sa'omer fulfills their obligation to count sphira sa'omer. And then he says, "Im lo shenit kaving, let's say spekasivatsu. If not for the fact, if someone didn't intend to fulfill their mitzvah here, his language is a little bit confusing. I want to skip ahead to the Aruch HaShulchan, who I think it could be that they're trying to say two different things, but I think that the Aruch HaShulchan is arguing this is really what the Sha'arei Teshuva is saying. The Aruch HaShulchan says in source number 9, Umisha katav v'mechtav, if someone wrote in a letter, Hayom kach v'kach la'omer, today is so-and-so days of the Omer, im lo kivein latzei, if they did not intend to fulfill their obligation, nira le'afilu l'man desvira le'mitzvot einan srichot kavana lo yatsa. Even according, if you didn't intend to fulfill your obligation, well, even according to those Rishonim who say that you don't need to intend to fulfill your obligation, you still haven't fulfilled your obligation. Why? It must be kevan delo asa ha mitzvah ketikuna have kenit kaven shelo latze. As because they did not fulfill the mitzvah as it was established, it is as if they explicitly intended not to fulfill their obligation. And it's say, even if what if you did fulfill intend to fulfill your obligation, then what? He says, "V'afilu kivein latzeit nira delo yatsa." Even if you intended to fulfill your obligation, it seems that one has not fulfilled their obligation by writing down Sfirasa Omer.
Well, the Torah says, "Sfatim lechem," right?
Uh huh.
So. Count, right? So it must be only
Bilba.
How do you count?
So Rav Soloveitchik actually has a whole thing where he thinks that the mitzvah, because the mitzvah of Sfira is actually to count, he said it means that you don't have to specifically verbalize that count. As long as you count it, you can do it in any medium, maybe even writing, he says. But let's see, he says, "Afilu ikativa kedibor dami." Even if you do say that writing is akin to speaking, and therefore you should be able to fulfill the obligation of Sfirat HaOmer by writing Sfira, "Zehu kshaktiva hu legalot al machashavot u'machashevet libo." That is only when the writing serves to reveal something that you are thinking. So if you are thinking that you don't want to speak to Shimon anymore, then to write that down might actually work. However, v'lo b'makom shehadibor hi hamitzvah, when there's a specific formula that requires enunciation, where there's a specific mitzvah to say something, he writes, Mide dehava akotev kriyat shema utzefila. Our example, such as somebody who says, maybe I will write down kriyat shema, or maybe I will write down tefillah, the Shemona Esrei. Vadai devadai lo yatsa. That individual has certainly not fulfilled their obligation. O kotev birkat hamazon. Neither is one who recites, who writes down birkat hamazon. It's essentially he's saying that I think he's saying what the Sha'arei Tshuva wrote in shorthand. The Aruch HaShulchan is saying in a little bit more detail. He says ketiva kedibor. The idea that writing is like speaking, if it works at all, only works for situations in which one has to express their thoughts, such as when one wishes to vow against benefiting from someone or against speaking to someone. But when it comes to things that must be spoken in a specific text, and certainly when speaking itself is the mitzvah, one only fulfills the mitzvah by reciting it in the fashion in which it was established. And therefore, one cannot write Sfirat HaOmer because it has to be enunciated. There's a specific formula. And nor can one write Davening or Shema because those all have specific formulas and thereby fulfill their obligation. I think what the Aruch HaShulchan and the Sha'arei Tshuva say clearly is that even if we hold that writing is akin to speaking, it would not work for tefillah. That only works for certain mitzvot. And we can say, our question again, is sign language. If writing tefillah shouldn't work, then using sign language, maybe to the extent that it's analogous to writing, should also not work. However, there was the opinion of the Chavos Ya'ir, as well as the opinion of other poskim cited by the Kaf HaChaim. If you want to read some more material, or you want to look at more sources, in the additional sources section I posted from the Kaf HaChaim, the Kaf HaChaim quotes other poskim who say that one can fulfill the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer by writing it. But that notwithstanding, it seems according to these poskim, one does not fulfill the obligation of Sfirat HaOmer by writing it. But some poskim do think that one has fulfilled the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer by writing it, and the Chavos Ya'ir seems to say that, generally speaking, writing it is going to work, writing something is going to work whenever dibor, whenever speaking is required. So let's take that and run with it. If we paskin like those poskim, like the Radbaz, and like the Gaonim, that writing is never going to be like speaking, then the discussion might be over. It might not be over. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe sign language can't be extrapolated from writing. But according to those poskim, that writing and dibor and speaking are mutually exclusive, the discussion is over. But some poskim do say that writing is going to work b'makom dibor when dibor is required, at least for certain things. And it begs the next question, which is, I think, the specific question we're answering here, which is sign language like writing? Exactly. If writing is, according to some poskim, like speaking, then maybe we have a heter, provided that sign language is akin to writing. So let's talk about that. The truth is there are two contradictory sources in Gittin. There are more sources that might speak to this, but the two we'll look at here are two contradictory sources in Gittin. The Mishnah in Gittin talks about somebody who was afflicted, chas v'shalom, with temporary insanity. Somebody who was lucid was then afflicted with a temporary form of insanity, not exactly clear what's going on. And in this state, he instructed other people to go and divorce his wife for him. That's what we're talking about here. So Mishnah Gittin in Perek Zayin. Misha Chazo Kurdiakos the Amar. Somebody who was afflicted with temporary insanity and said, Katfu get l'ishti, go write a bill of divorce for my wife. Lo Amar Klum. It is as if he has not said anything because the individual didn't want to do this when he was lucid. We assume that his saying this is not what he actually wants, and so therefore we do not actually heed his request. Amar katvu get liishti. But what if when he was lucid he instructed people, go write my wife a bill of divorce? Va'achazu kurdiakos. And then he became temporarily insane. V'chazar v'amar al tichtavu. And then, before the bill of divorce was sent, he became lucid again, and he said, no, I don't want you to send it. In that case, ein dvarav ha'achronim klum. Then we're talking about a case where he specifically retracted when he was still in the state of insanity. He was lucid and he said, please divorce my wife. And then in this cordiaco state, he said, no, actually, I changed my mind. So then again, we don't listen to him because we assume that what he wants is what he said when he was lucid and thinking clearly. So in that case, that's what we're going to do. However, the Mishnah continues, nishtatek, if the individual became mute, if the individual lost his ability to speak, the amru lo nichtov get liishtecha, and the people asked him, do you want us to write a bill of divorce for your wife? V'hir kin birosho, and he nodded his head. Bod kinoto shlosha pe'amim. We ask him questions three different times to make sure that what he's doing with his body is an accurate reflection of what he actually wants. In that case, him amar al lav lav al hein hein. If he's able to answer the questions appropriately, they ask him, is it sunny outside? And he's able to answer the questions accurately. So in that case, hare elu yichtavu v'yitenu. Then we do heed his request to provide a bill of divorce to his wife, because we assume that the nodding he gave was a genuine reflection of what he actually wanted. What we can see from here, it seems to indicate at least, and we're kind of getting more specific, we're talking about actual bodily movements, which is much more akin to sign language, which is a bodily movement. So it seems to indicate that bodily movements are enough to at least initiate a divorce, provided it's clear that's what the individual wants. However, we have another source. It's a Gemara in Gittin, not far away from this Mishnah. The Gemara in Gittin says that, first, it's important to note that a bill of divorce is non-transferable. What that means is that if a man decides to divorce his wife, and then he decides, he has the bill of divorce written, and then he decides he doesn't want to divorce his wife, another guy cannot come over and say, can I use that bill of divorce for my wife? Because you would save me a lot of money. I don't have to get a bill of divorce. So that's not going to work. The bill of divorce has to be written specifically lishma. It has to be for the sake of the woman it is supposed to be delivered to, and it is not transferable. And the husband must specify to the scribe, or whoever is writing this bill of divorce, that it is for his wife. So now we can learn our Gemara. The Gemara says, Katav sofer lishma. If the sofer, the scribe, wrote a bill of divorce for a particular woman, v'chatzmu edin lishma, and the witnesses who are required to sign this bill of divorce signed this bill of divorce with intent that it be delivered to this particular woman. Afal pisha k'davu v'chatamu v'natnuhu lo v'natnu la harei haget b'tel. Even if it was written and it was signed and they gave it to the husband, then he even gave it to his wife, Haget batel. The divorce and the divorce document is not considered valid ad sheyishmeu kolo, until he actually verbalizes it. Sheyomar lesofer ketovu leedim chetomo. Until the husband specifically verbalizes to the scribe, "Hey scribe, you should write this bill of divorce document for the sake of my wife." And also he tells the witnesses, "You have to sign this bill of divorce for the sake of my wife." In other words, a bill of divorce is not going to be valid until the husband verbally says that you have to do this for the sake of my wife. Even if they did it for the sake of his wife, it's not, and even if he gave his wife that get, it's not valid until the husband says it. He has to actually say it. Unless there is any ambiguity about what this Gemara means, the Gemara continues. Why is this necessary to be stated? La apuki miman da amar moda Rabbi Yosi ba'omir imru kolu la apuki mi derav kahana amar rav. We need this in order to teach us, in order to dispute the reasoning of Rav Kahana saying in the name of Rav that a husband can issue written instructions to the scribe and to witnesses. According to our Braita, we therefore learn that the instructions must be verbal. Specifically, writing is not going to count. Now this is a tremendous difficulty. What's the tremendous difficulty? The tremendous difficulty is that the implication of this Gemara is that the scribe and the witnesses must A, hear the husband request this bill of divorce themselves, and B, those instructions must be verbal. They cannot be written down. And we have a tremendous contradiction. Because our Mishnah, the first source that we read, indicates that even bodily motions can count to communicate halachically, and a divorce can be effected even if the person is not able to speak, but merely indicates by nodding his head that he wants to give a get. However, our Gemara indicates that it has to be verbal, and even writing doesn't count. Even writing doesn't count. We would think that if communication must be verbal, then body motions are not going to cut it. Or, if body motions are going to cut it, then seemingly writing should be no worse than the bodily motions. But here we have a strange situation where bodily motions work and speaking works, but writing does not. And it's very strange. The Rishonim addressed this discrepancy. The Rush in particular provides two answers. And one of his answers is as follows. In source number 12, he writes, Efshar deharchana adifa tfei. Mishum demar'e begufo. It is possible that there is no contradiction. Indeed, nodding halachically is better than writing. Bodily communication is even better than writing because it allows the individual to communicate with his actual body. I think the implication is that's a more robust form of communication because it's more demonstrative than simply writing something. And B, it's more similar to speaking because it actually involves using your body. I guess you're using your body to write, but in a much more minute way than actually verbalizing something, which is hearable, or actually using sign language, which is much easier to observe. And so he writes that this is why nodding works and writing does not work. And what emerges from this is something profound. Even if you want to say that writing doesn't work to halachically communicate, maybe we can't necessarily extrapolate from writing to sign language. Maybe, hatenach, writing is not going to work. But sign language still will. Because there's more to bodily communication than there is to writing. And in fact, somebody can affect a get with a nod when they couldn't have affected it in writing. So maybe according to the Rush, you can say that sign language would be better than writing. And it can definitely work. Now again, I had mentioned that the Rush has a second answer to this question. So it would really depend on which answer of the Rush we paskim like. If it's this answer, then great. But if it's the other answer, it's not going to matter. But at least potentially, we can see from the Rush that there's grounds to say that sign language and body movement is a more robust form of communication and can work even where writing does not. Rabbi Elisha Anshelovich, or Anshelovitz, I'm truthfully not totally clear how to pronounce his last name. I think it's Anshelovich. Rabbi Elisha Anshelovich is a prominent teacher at the Yeshivat Ma'alei Gilboa in Israel. He has an article in Tchumen. Tchumen is a popular and prestigious Torah journal. And in volume 21 of Tchumen, I think it was published in the early 2000s, he discusses the question of whether somebody who is both hard of hearing and mute and unable to speak is obligated in mitzvot. And he reaches the following conclusion, partially based on this ruling of the Rush. In source number 13 on page 4, he writes, "Lefi ha-hezber harishon b'Rush, according to this first explanation of the Rush, which we just read, matan siman ve'emsa'ut haguf karchanat rosh adif miktiva, speaking through the body, using the body to communicate, and body language to communicate is even better than writing. Mimela, means cheresh she'enu medaber, somebody who is hard of hearing and is unable to speak, hamit kasher b'tzfat ha-simanim, nechshav kimedaber. Halachically, he argues on the basis of this, at least according to the Rush, somebody who is only able to speak via sign language is considered somebody who can halachically communicate, and A, is going to be considered obligated or able to fulfill the mitzvah, obligated in mitzvot. And B, he writes, it is possible that sign language is considered a bona fide language for everything. And if we have before us a person who is hard of hearing and speaks, maybe such an individual is going to be considered somebody who can not only fulfill his own obligations or her own obligations, but can maybe even fulfill the obligations of other people. So Rav Elisha Anshulovitz writes that it's possible, he writes it b'torat efshar, meaning he says it's, he doesn't conclusively say this is the halacha, but he certainly says there is room to paskin that A, somebody who can communicate in only sign language is going to be considered like somebody who can speak. And what that means then is that sign language is considered a real language and you can use it to dispense obligations. He does say that where Hebrew specifically is required, obviously sign language, which is kind of what your question was, obviously sign language is not going to work because then we require not just a verbal pronunciation, but a specific verbal pronunciation. It has to be not just in a language, but it has to be in a specific language. And so sign language is not the specific verbalized language, so it's not going to work. But besides for that, remember we learned in our Mishnah in Sota that at least in an extenuating circumstance, tefillah can be recited in any language. Seemingly, somebody can fulfill their obligation to daven in sign language, according to Rabbi Elisha Anshulovitz. That's maybe. However, Rabbi Yaakov Ariel has a tshuva where he disagrees. Rabbi Yaakov Ariel is a leading religious Zionist rabbi. He's the current chief rabbi of Ramat Gan. And he writes in his tshuvos Be'ola Shel Torah in Chelek Vav Simen Chavtet, he actually says, maybe you can say the opposite. We said, based on the Rush, that maybe bodily communication and sign language is better than writing. He says, no, maybe it's worse. Maybe it's worse than writing. It's less communication. It's less communicative than actually writing. And he writes in source number 14, V'yesh l'chalek ben k'tiva l'sfat ha-simanim. We should differentiate between writing and sign language. Because at least when someone is writing, they're using the same alphabet and the same language that someone is using when they speak. It's just the way that they externalize it is different. Somebody who speaks externalizes it verbally, and somebody who writes externalizes it in writing. But they're using the same alphabet. They're using the same lexicon. They're using the same language. Be'etzem ha-kitav hu ot safa meduberet. Writing is the written tongue. However, masha eno kein safat ha-simanim hu shafa shone l'chalutin. But safat ha-simanim is in a completely different ballpark. At least when you're writing something, you're writing it in a spoken language. But it has to be, and I guess this is really the implication of what he says, that even if writing could work, we cannot necessarily say the same about sign language, because the difference between sign language and speaking is greater than the difference between writing and speaking. Writing is much closer to speaking, he argues, because they share a common language. But sign language shares a different language. It's a different alphabet. It's a different, it's totally different. And so therefore, where writing, even if you want to say that writing might work sometimes, sign language, he argues, or at least implies, would not work any of the time. There are some difficulties with this argument, because even if you want to say that they share the same language, there's, because one is writing and one is speaking, one is writing, there's no way to know what an A, for example, looks like. The same way that, like, if you verbalize it, why is the body sign language of an A any less of an A than a written form of an A? That's his shita, and that's what he says. So we're almost at time here. How do we conclude this? So we really have a machlokas every step of the way. Number one, regarding whether writing is halachically considered like speaking. And number two, even if writing is considered like speaking, we don't know whether sign language is considered like writing. Some suggest that sign language might even be better than writing. And in fact, some argue indeed that on this basis, there's reason to say that one who needs to communicate via sign language may actually use it to fulfill most mitzvot. On the other hand, some poskim do not feel comfortable drawing distinctions between sign language and writing. And in any case, there are many, if not most poskim, who feel that in the first place, writing is nothing to do with speaking. I just want to close with a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this, and I think many people don't know about this tshuva, but he really does address our question head on, and it should be more a part of the halachic literature that discussed this question. Source number 15, the Igros Moshe. He writes, when it comes to a person who is hard of hearing, relying on sign language to daven and things, he actually addresses our specific question. Can somebody who fulfills their obligation, who can only speak via sign language, fulfill their obligation? We were talking about this. We were trying to deduce and to extrapolate. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about our question. Again, I haven't seen this in any treatments of the topic, so I don't know why. I don't of specifically somebody using being only communicating in sign language can fulfill obligations of tefillah and stuff like that. I didn't see it in Rav Shlomovitz's article, but presumably it's very relevant. Ein l'chayrush. Well, he was more focusing on Rishonim, but it's a relevant source certainly for us. So he says, that a person who is deaf, who blesses or prays, has to verbalize the words in his or her mouth. However, he writes, and he continues, people who cannot, who are hard of hearing, should not convey blessings by using their hands, meaning by using sfat hasimanim, by using sign language. Ella, they should really try to speak the words with their mouths to whatever extent they are able to. Now, somebody who was born deaf will, statistically speaking, have a much harder time with this because they've never heard their voice to understand how to modulate and to regulate it. Somebody who went deaf later in life is probably still able to speak, depending on the reason why they went deaf. And so Rav Moshe says, no matter what, though, you should try to verbalize it if you're hard of hearing, and to the greatest extent possible, kifi yecholatam, as much as you can. But he says, rak b'mikra she'enam yecholim ledaber klal. But in a situation where somebody is categorically unable to speak at all, adif she'yasu simanim b'idehim, then they should still daven and recite brachot with sign language, me'asher rak yechashavu et habrachot v'atfil machshavam, then really just think them. If that's the only other option, Rav Moshe says you should really speak them. So it's hard to tell what Rav Moshe holds here. He seems to kind of hedge his bets. He says you really should be doing this, but doing it via sign language is still better than nothing. Which I think maybe means Rav Moshe himself is not exactly sure. He's very reticent to say that it's akin to speaking, but he does think that it might have some valence, that it's at least worth doing more than simply thinking it. It does have some expressive halachic expressive potential. So I think that this can be a third shita. Whereas Rav Elisha and Shalovich and Tchumim argues that there are grounds to permit sign language as a means to fulfill mitzvot, Rav Yaakov Ariel is the second shita, seems to disagree. Rav Moshe seems to say that it should be done only when there's no other option. But when there is no other option, maybe it is indeed worth something. And he says, let's talk about Psak for a minute. So I think that when it comes to practically addressing this question and arriving at Pesach, it has to be done in consultation with the individuals who would be impacted by this. It can't be answered in a vacuum. So we're not going to paskin this right now, but I think we did get an overview of the sources. I think we've explored some of the interesting halachic issues involved. And thank you all for coming. I'm going to stop the recording. I have to head out in a couple minutes. I'll stick around though for questions for a minute. I just want to note that I'll be away from shul for the next 2 weeks on vacation. So we will not be meeting. We usually don't meet in 1 week, but we're not going to be meeting in 2 weeks either. And the week after that is Memorial Day. So we're hoping to reconvene on June 5th, but it's not exactly clear when we'll be able to start up yet. So please just expect a communication if you're interested in coming. Expect a communication from the shul and maybe from Joan also. Thank you all so much for coming. Have a meaningful day and almost happy Lag BaOmer.